Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 482. I'm Amy Matheny. The Olympic Games have wrapped up. Market Days has wrapped up. It's cooling here in Chicago. Is summer wrapping up? Oh, I hope not. Stretch it on out. Stretch it on out. We need more summer. Everybody, I hope you had a wonderful Market Days and survived that. I hope you enjoyed watching the Olympics till the very last minute. Very exciting, these games. And on today's show, Ross Foreman, sports editor for Windy City Times, my buddy. We've been doing this thing with Windy City Media for a long time, and he is on the show. We're going to wrap up the Olympics, naming what our top events and stories were, and what this games continued to mean for LGBT athletes, and looking ahead to the upcoming big gay and straight mainstream competitions coming up in the athletic world. Also, lots of LGBT news. It just continues. Entirely. Movie review with Richard Knight Jr. and much, much more. It's a little quiet on the theater front right now, but that's going to be kicking up here in the fall. So sit back and enjoy. And we've got a chance for you also to win a trip to Vancouver, one of my favorite places. And I got to go and hang out with the people from Tourism Vancouver who were in town. This past week, we went to Table 52, openly gay chef Art Smith, formerly the chef of Oprah Winfrey, an amazing out gay man who has the most beautiful restaurant of Southern cuisine. Of course, one of my favorites, Table 52 here in Chicago. Went there with Tourism Vancouver and lots of other people from gay media outlets around the city. And really great to kind of meet the other people who are telling our stories, whether they're blogging about it, they have websites, other magazines who cover the gay scene, and also some online television that's starting up in the Chicago area. So a lot of fun, plus some of the mainstream, NBC and Sun Times were there, all getting to know more and more about Vancouver, one of my all-time favorite places to visit, and they have a new sweepstakes, which we're going to be promoting weekly here on the podcast, and I encourage you to enter to win, because let me tell you, if I could win a trip to Vancouver, I would be so excited. Great place for outdoors, for food, for shopping, for all things queer. They have such a vibrant gay community. You can even get married there. And our Windy City gay idol, Robert Hughes, just went there as well for their gay pride the first week of August, here a couple weeks ago. So I think summer's continuing, and maybe a trip to Vancouver is in your stars. So enter to win. Ross Foreman on the show. We're going to talk Olympic fever. I'll be back after this.
Vancouver is home to Western Canada's largest LGBT population, and now you can enter for your chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction prize package to Vancouver, British Columbia. a safe and welcoming destination for diehard shoppers, avid outdoor thrill seekers, nightlife aficionados, and dedicated food lovers, Vancouver is a world-class city offering something for everyone. From sports pubs to drag shows, leather bars to dance clubs, lounges and restaurants, Vancouver's got it all. Plus, Vancouver Pride celebrations and the Vancouver Queer Film Festival in July and August, and Whistler's Winter Pride in February. Tourism Vancouver is pleased to offer you and a guest the chance to win a trip to Vancouver in 2013. For a chance to win the Lights, Camera, Attraction sweepstakes, visit tourismvancouver.com/lights by November 30th, 2012 to enter. That's tourismvancouver.com/lights.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. President Obama opposes the recently affirmed Boy Scout of America policy of banning gay individuals. A White House statement reads, "The president believes the Boy Scouts is a valuable organization that has helped educate and build character in American boys for more than a century. He also opposes discrimination in all forms, and as such opposes this policy that discriminates on basis of sexual orientation." Mitt Romney's campaign team also confirmed that the Republican presidential candidate believes as well that gay Americans should be allowed to participate in the Boy Scouts.
HRC announced a further cash investment of $1 million in the four states facing marriage-related ballot measures in November: Maine, Maryland, Minnesota, and Washington. The cash infusion brings HRC's contributions to legislative and electoral marriage issues in the 2011-2012 cycle to $4.8 million.
In Michigan, openly gay candidate Trevor Thomas, who worked as an activist in D.C. before returning to his home state, lost the Democratic nomination for Michigan's 3rd Congressional District to Steve Pestka. Pestka will go on to challenge Republican incumbent Representative Justin Amash in the general election.
Because of a congressional bill, congregants of the notoriously anti-gay Westboro Baptist Church in Kansas will soon be severely limited in their ability to disrupt military funerals. According to the Honoring America's Veterans and Caring for Camp Lejeune Families Act of 2012, demonstrators will no longer be allowed to picket military funerals 2 hours before or after a service.
A gay man, Peter Tervaer, is suing the Library of Congress, saying he was fired after being harassed for more than a year by a supervisor who constantly quoted biblical passages condemning homosexuality. Tervaer, who is 30, is alleging employment discrimination based on his gender stereotyping, and his religious beliefs in violation of Title VII of the United States Civil Rights Act of 1964. 4 years ago, a judge ruled that the library illegally discriminated against a transgender woman.
Several Chick-fil-A restaurants across the nation held a joint kiss-off on August 3rd, 2 days after huge crowds turned out to support the fast food chain and company president Dan Cathy. However, the August 3rd counter-protest appeared to draw far fewer people than the August 1st demonstrations, which resulted in Chick-fil-A establishing sales records.
A new report out of Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine details the experimentation that's been going on in the field of fetal engineering. The report claims that doctors are using a synthetic steroid to prevent female babies with a propensity toward lesbianism, bisexuality, tomboyism, and intersexuality from being born. The paper's authors use the Freedom of Information Act findings to detail an extremely troubling off-label medical intervention employed in the United States on pregnant women.
Jury selection has begun in a defamation lawsuit against former Michigan Assistant Attorney General Andrew Shervell, who was accused of harassing gay University of Michigan alumnus Chris Armstrong. Shervell was fired from his job after starting an anti-gay blog in which he regularly criticized Armstrong, describing the former student as heading a, quote, radical homosexual agenda, and calling him a representative of Satan. Armstrong's attorney said the charges would be dropped if Shervell apologized, but he refused.
The spotlight may shift from Chick-fil-A to Amway after it was discovered that the health and beauty company's co-owner, Doug DeVos, has given $500,000 to the anti-gay National Organization for Marriage through the Doug and Marie DeVos Foundation. Gay activist Fred Karger wrote that a boycott against Chick-fil-A and Amway was just like National Organization of Marriage's boycott efforts against gay-friendly companies like Starbucks and General Mills.
Military veterans have announced the establishment of the National LGBT Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. as a lasting testament to the contributions of LGBT service members. The Board of Directors has entered into an agreement with the historic Congressional Cemetery to establish the memorial there and has purchased cemetery plots for the project. Memorial Day 2014 is the target date for the dedication ceremony.
ProtectMarriage.com, Yes on 8, the Campaign Committee for California's Anti-Marriage Equality Initiative, Prop 8, faces $49,000 in fines for failing to properly report and handle political contributions it received. Also, the group allegedly failed to properly report more than $1 million in contributions. The committee faces 18 counts of violating state campaign finance laws.
Jack Furtig, a professional astrologer who became famous as Sister Boom Boom, one of the early members of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, died August 5th in San Francisco at the age of 57. Furtig was diagnosed with liver cancer last year. In 1982, running as Sister Boom Boom and listing his occupation as, quote, none of the above, Furtig received more than 23,000 votes as a candidate for the San Francisco Board of Supervisors.
In world news, the French Catholic Church is revising a centuries-old custom with an updated national prayer for France that opposes the same-sex marriage and euthanasia reforms the new socialist government is planning, according to Reuters. The prayer, to be read in all churches August 15th, echoes the defense of traditional marriage by Pope Benedict XVI and Catholic leaders around the world as same-sex marriage gains acceptance. In 1638, King Louis VIII decreed that all churches would pray on August 15th, the day Catholics believed the Virgin Mary was assumed bodily into heaven.
In Italy, Nici Vendola, the openly gay governor of the southern Puglia region and leader of the Cell Party, has announced his candidacy for prime minister in the 2013 elections. Vendola, age 53, may face three-time Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, who resigned in November amid a deepening debt crisis and sex charges. Should Vendola win, he would be the country's first out gay prime minister.
Mexican entertainer Chavela Vargas, known for defying gender stereotypes, died in Cuernavaca, Mexico at the age of 93. She rose to fame while singing ranchera songs while wearing men's clothes, smoking cigars, and carrying a pistol. Vargas, whose music was featured in the Pedro Almodovar films, didn't come out until publishing her autobiography, If You Want to Know About My Past, at age 81.
Gay Australian Olympian G. Wallace has publicly revealed his HIV status. Wallace, a trampolinist who won a silver medal at the Sydney 2000 Games, said in an interview U.S. diver Greg Louganis gave about being a gay Olympian and his battle with HIV inspired him.
In entertainment news, full casting has been announced for the world premiere production of The Bodyguard, based on the movie starring Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner, that begins performances at Adelphi Theatre in London's West End, according to Playbill.com. Heather Headley and Lloyd Owen will head the cast, and the show's score will include many of Houston's greatest hits. The show starts November 6th.
Openly gay media moguls Craig Zaden and Neil Marin, executive producers of such shows as Smash, have signed a two-year deal with Sony Pictures Television. The duo is reportedly developing a Lifetime movie about Constance McMillan, the lesbian student barred from attending a Mississippi prom with another girl.
Writer Bret Easton Ellis said it would be ludicrous for actor Matt Bomer to be cast as the lead in the film adaptation of the sexually explicit book Fifty Shades of Grey. Ellis said Matt Bomer is totally hot and a very good actor. He is not right for Christian Grey, and it complicates the role. I don't care how good an actor you are, but being married to another man complicates things for playing Christian Grey.
Marvin Hamlisch, the composer of musicals A Chorus Line and songs The Way We Were, has died at the age of 68. Hamlisch was nominated for 12 Academy Awards. He was also a three-time Oscar winner for the scores of The Sting, as well as The Way We Were. He won 4 Emmy Awards, 4 Grammy Awards. Hamlisch also snagged a Tony Award for his score to the musical of A Chorus Line.
Lindsay Lohan is reportedly appearing in Lady Gaga's music video to support Gaga's next studio album, Art Pop. Lohan is currently filming the Bret Easton Ellis scripted drama The Canyon opposite straight porn star James Dean.
Out actor Rupert Everett will star as Oscar Wilde in David Hare's The Judas Kiss, which will run at the UK's Cambridge Arts Theatre in November. Forced to make a choice between his lover and freedom, the production will show the ever-romantic Wilde embarking on a course towards self-destruction.
On August 13th, HGTV's House Hunters International will profile the story of Ivan and Devin, a binational couple who previously lived in Washington, D.C. The couple has been forced abroad because of the Defense of Marriage Act's impact on LGBT couples.
And Barbara Streisand has announced more tour dates, including an October 23rd show in Toronto and an October 26th performance in Chicago. She will also perform October 8th in Philadelphia, the 11th and 13th in Brooklyn, New York, and October 17th in Montreal.
And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls, and you are listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr., and here's your Net at the Movies Mega Minute. 4 years ago, I touted The Dark Knight as the best, the most enthralling blockbuster of all time. But with that excessive praise, I also doled out a warning, because the movie came at a price, and so does The Dark Knight Rises, director Christopher Nolan's third and final installment in his take on the Batman mythology. It, too, is as pitch black as its title. It, too, is a film that works on you psychologically at the same time as it's ramping up your senses. But unlike its predecessor, which managed to straddle a perfect balance between a thrill ride and a heavy going downer, Nolan's new movie tilts so far toward the latter that the emotional pummeling dilutes his triumphant, grandiose set pieces. Nolan adopts the same tragic mood and sweeping grand scale of grand opera that he used in the two previous outings, emphasizing this with the Wagner-like score of Hans Zimmer, whose music is so omnipresent that the movie is unthinkable without it. Nolan's script is equally filled with melancholy monologues that are placed between the jaw-dropping set pieces. These serve to deepen involvement in the characters, which is to the good, as are Anne Hathaway, who is fast and funny, though not the least sexy, as Catwoman, a returning Morgan Freeman, Joseph Gordon-Levitt as the eager young cop, and Michael Caine as Bruce Wayne's fuss-budget butler, Alfred. But the relentless gloom of the movie, the socialist agenda of the hulking villain Bane, played by hunky Tom Hardy with the Darth Vader-like mask, the unexciting addition of Marion Cotillard, whose character seems wedged into the proceedings, and mostly the absence of Bale himself, whose Bruce Wayne seems shunted into the background, tamp down these gains. And Hardy as Bane can't hold a candle to Heath Ledger's Joker, not even close. And why can't I understand a thing that he said? And Bale, let's be honest, is not a leading man that invites warmth or familiarity. He's not easy to love, making it hard to root for the characters he plays. These caveats aside, filmmaking on this scale is admittedly awe-inspiring, and not unlike the moment in Inception when Ellen Page flipped Paris on its side, Nolan's eye-popping spectacle is certainly breathtaking, but it's a joyless, bitter epic without a hint of exhilaration. The Dark Knight Rises is the kind of doom and gloom blockbuster that Ingmar Bergman would have made, given the budget or the inclination. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Mega Minute.
Hello, Deb Pierce here, letting you know that we'd love to hear back from you. So go ahead. You know you want to. Post a comment.
Continue around the world to be on Olympic fever this past week in London as they wrapped up the big 2012 games. And we talked in our last show with Ross Foreman, the sports editor for Windy City Times, who's written for USA Today, the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Sun-Times, Daily Herald, and elsewhere. And he has focused the past decade of his writing on LGBT sports. So perfect person for us to be continuing a long conversation about a very exciting Olympic Games this year. Hey, Ross, thanks for being on again.
No problem. Thank you.
So there was just so much to talk about, and interestingly enough, a lot to talk about just with the 23 out athletes that that were in this games and that we know about. Of course, I'm sure there are many, many more we don't know about. But, you know, we had some eyes on the U.S. soccer and on the equestrian team. So let's follow up some of those stories. I mean, Megan Rapinoe, a pretty good story, pretty good representative for us in the LGBT community this games.
I didn't think things would get better for her and the team than the Canada semifinal game. But, of course, they went on to beat Japan 2-1, win the gold. You got a player and a head coach. Out lesbians.
Yep.
Certainly that had to be from a team sport, perhaps the best LGBT moment of the games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and she had such an enthusiasm, such an Olympic spirit, I thought. You know, she's known as like being the one that jumps up and loves the big jump hug and just a real spirit of the game and teamwork and scoring a number of goals throughout her Olympic career this summer. So that was pretty exciting.
She had three goals in the six games, so obviously, and then two in the semifinals. So it was a great Olympics for Megan. And
yeah.
She certainly had to be proud, and obviously the entire LGBT community was rallying. That semifinal win over Canada was a great win, and mm-hmm. then, you know, certainly followed up with an exciting 2-1 win over Japan, which was great. And of course you followed that with another team win when the U.S. Women's basketball team, I mean, to be honest, they pretty much dominated.
Sure.
France, I didn't realize France was the big women's power, but I'm trying to think, I think that was 86-50 was the final in that game. So not exactly a close match, but, you know, hey, it's still gold, and, you know,
yeah,
we'll take a 36-point win.
Yeah, exactly. So we had spoken about the fact that there were two openly gay men, because mostly they are not, most of the out athletes happen to be women. An overwhelming majority that have come out have been women. But we were following the equestrian riders and the British equestrian rider Carl Hester did quite well in London.
Yeah, obviously, I think the actual number is three you know, gay men mm-hmm. who are out of the 23 overall, and they did well. You know, it's weird because there's so many other I don't want to say minor sports, but, you know, equestrian did well. Field hockey did exceptional mm-hmm. on the LGBT front. The Dutch field hockey contingent was very strong, and you know, but it's still, like you say, if you think of three of all the male athletes who were in this Olympics, only three of them are openly gay.
Yeah.
Kind of a small number.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it was cool to see that we had talked about the fact that, you know, are gay Olympians, do they perform better? But we definitely, as you said, saw some great performances. The Carl Hester winning on dressage team, interesting that they do that sport in teams. It seems such an isolated sport, but so cool for gay Brits, because there in his home country, being an openly gay man and helping that team win gold. And then, as you said, the Dutch field hockey as well, with, I believe, a number of out.
They are two, and don't even try to ask me to pronounce their name.
They're just hot Dutch lesbians.
I won't even try either of their two names.
Yeah.
So you can just take my word. There were Dutch field hockey players who are out I'm just not going to butcher their names.
Yes. Well, and it's interesting, right? Because we talked about the fact that these Dutch women have been called the most beautiful Olympians this year. And so fantastic that they did so well. They're attractive, they're talented, they're athletic, and redefining, I think, kind of what is a beautiful woman. You know, we have all these, for at least women, and I think gay women deal with the same thing, these images of a distorted view of how women are supposed to be viewed. And the Olympics are always just such a great rallier, I think, to all of us about just our own fitness and health and health and taking care of ourselves to kind of show what we could be. Now, granted, none of us will be, most of us won't be 20 something anymore, but you know, there were a lot of older Olympians this year as well in many, many categories. So I think that's exciting when we see people who are not just 18 and 20 really excelling at their sports.
True. I mean, that's very true. You know, the sad part from the male perspective was, of course, Matthew Mitchum, who didn't was not able to retain his gold from 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly was out and proud in his performance, making it, you know, a couple rounds and then not qualifying for the finals in his diving.
Yeah. I mean, he's been such an amazing face for these other athletes, I think, and really pioneered, you know, being out and actively in the sport, as opposed to some people who have come out, you know, after they've had their glory days with the sport. He's really, to me, the new generation, right? I mean, he and Megan and some of these others are really redefining what it means to be out and proud while competing.
Sure, sure. He's a great example. Doesn't hold back, doesn't hide, you know, who he is. And, you know, certainly wanted to, you know, defend his title, gave a great effort, and, you know, certainly it has to be proud of what he accomplished over in London.
Absolutely. And with that, with all those sports in the water, you know, just seconds and inches and, you know, it's so minuscule, the perfection level that these athletes have to achieve. It's just mind blowing.
Oh, it's not even seconds. It's almost milliseconds.
Milliseconds.
For some
right.
of them. I mean, you look at, you know, what Usain Bolt did. I mean, it's crazy to think how fast he is.
Yeah.
And then you think the guy who's probably second, third. I mean, I don't know how many were in that event, you know, in the finals over there, 10. You think about first 10th place, even if it's like 2-3 seconds difference, yet that 10th, you know, the last place finisher, mm-hmm. has got to be crazy fast.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, Usain is so much faster than that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even, for a lot of these events, it's not even seconds. It's less than a second.
Millisecond. So let's talk, because, you know, it
exactly.
seems like kind of the first half of the games, heavy focus on swimming, heavy focus on gymnastics. Second half of the games is really when it goes out into the field, you know, track and field. And how did this Olympics fare in all of those sports, gay or otherwise, athletes? How did this track and field, where you know, the U.S. has dominated in some years and fallen really short behind some of the African countries and other countries on the field?
Well, I think overall it was a great game. Obviously, the U.S. You know, won the medal count. You know, 102 medals overall. China was second with 87. Russia and Britain third and fourth. But I thought for the U.S. it was a great games. I mean, you know, they came in strong and pretty much showed that, you know, U.S. can dominate in a lot of areas that it has in the past and continues to. So I thought overall, I thought it was a great games.
And the women's track, was it the 400? What I get all the numbers messed up, but the world record for women runners, I can't remember. U.S. women dominated some world record for running, I think, the relay, which was,
I think you're talking the 800.
The 800, that would be it, right? 400's more.
Yes.
Strong. Yeah, I mean, it's exciting moment for those women, for sure.
Yeah, no, I thought overall it was great. I mean, I loved watching the, personally, I enjoyed men's soccer finals, or do I have to officially call it football? I guess that's probably what it's called around the world. But
the men's soccer finals, yeah.
I thought it was a great game. You know, I was glad to see Mexico win its first gold. I think that was their first gold of the games at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a good game, 2-1 final. So, you know, it was fun. I thought overall the games were good. You know, I thought one of the funnier, go back kind of on an LGBT front, one of the funnier game moments, it had nothing to do with LGBT or gay participants. It was simply the photo of the U.S. rowers that is. I mean, if you even have a Facebook account, someone on your stream has posted this photo. And it's the U.S. rowers. There are four of them. You know, the U.S. flag's behind them. They got their medals. They're on the stand. And they had just won the bronze medal. They're in their, I don't know, Lycra or tights or whatever. And it appears as though one of them is, he's just very excited to have won the bronze. Let's just leave it at that.
Right.
And that photo, I mean, I cannot believe how many people have, and I think he actually, the actual swimmer had to issue a statement. No, I'm not completely excited for this gold medal, if you can read between the lines on that. But it was unbelievable how everybody was posting this photo. You know, certainly within the LGBT community,
yes.
Or at least the G portion of that,
yes.
LGBT.
Yes.
But it was funny, and then of course the rower actually had to reply to that.
But
photo.
He's just well endowed, and he wasn't that excited, but he was excited.
That's what he was saying.
That's what he was saying. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's really exciting too that. You know, at a time when these kind of, I mean, almost have to mention this in this day and age, that there, you know, it seemed to be fairly quiet in terms of any acts of violence, any acts of any threat, or seemed to be that they were, the safety issues were handled very well. And this game did go off without incident, and people really got to enjoy the spirit of these Olympic Games and look forward to Rio, which I think Rio should be extremely gay and extremely sexy. So if you are an LGBT athlete who might be poised to be an Olympian, I really think Rio's the year to come out. I hope that Duran Duran does the opening number. And
how do they not?
And then, you know, the big, I mean, Carnival and I mean, just really gay it up, because it could be really, really fun. You know, it is interesting to note, I didn't know this, you know, that they do have, you know, in the Olympic Village, they have areas for all kinds of people, and the athletes really get to stay there and stay focused and be secure and be with one another and be outside the attention of the media. But, you know, interestingly enough, there is a Pride House on the or there was on Olympic Village in London, and there had been as well in Vancouver, and, you know, place for the 23 LGBT athletes and maybe their partners or whomever, you know, to kind of be during the game, and a resource for them. I'm sure there are a lot of LGBT organizations and clubs and things like that around Britain who, you know, wanted to show their support to those athletes. But it's really interesting that for the 2014 games in Russia, you know, what is going to be the state for these out gay athletes in a country where, you know, they've already said that a Pride House would not be sanctioned in at those games. And, you know, I know you said you enjoyed winter sports, you know, you're kind of more of a winter because you're such a hockey lover and other things. Winter games, it will be interesting to see a different climate, pun intended, for the out athletes in the Winter Games coming up, and how you deal with that as well when you're trying to compete and stay focused.
Well, it's so interesting. Like, if you look at these next 4 years, obviously this was a pretty, you know, 23, LGBT participants in these games. That's a high number considering what it's been in the past.
Correct.
We flash forward to the next year. Obviously next year we have the out games, the World Out Games, which is certainly nothing like the Olympics, but that's 2013 in Antwerp, Belgium. 2014, we have both the Gay Games, the Federation of Gay Games, event in Cleveland, and then you also have the Sochi Olympics in the Winter Olympics, obviously in Russia. So you have the complete opposite in 2014. You'll have an event that is overly gay in Cleveland, and I think, like you say, I think 2014 will be. I mean, that number from 23, obviously, you're not going to say for Christmas because it's winter and summer.
Right.
That number will be very low.
Yeah.
You know, and you won't have the people who could come out or want to come out because of where the event is held. Then you go a couple of years more, and, you know, we're in 2016. And like you say, Rio, that could be, you know, super gay. That could be a very high number of gay participants because of where it's at. So these next 4 years are very interesting on the LGBT sporting front.
Yeah, it really is true. And I mean, I think it's interesting too, you know, when we talk about, we come from a country where we can all be having a debate, like the Chick-fil-A debate, you know, freedom of speech, whatever, but we're also having all of these intense initiatives for non-discrimination and equality in the workplace. You know, we've seen in our country, most Fortune 500 companies, you know, have GLBT protections. They want that HRC 100%, you know, quality index. Most companies are not Chick-fil-A and are moving toward getting it right and being on the right side of this issue. But really interesting, I'm curious, with the spirit of the Olympics and the, you know, the International Olympic Code, and I don't know a ton about this, but it would be interesting. I did read somewhere that the Olympic Code, or I don't know what they call it, but the board or documents or whatever that rule the Olympic Games, you know, they prohibit discrimination, they prohibit inequality, they believe in providing an equal place. This is where some of the stuff comes up, which you talked about with badminton, with drug use. You know, they want a level playing field. It's really interesting to see, will before 2014, LGBT activists and people who are fighting for human rights, civil rights, will this become a conversation to so clearly, discriminate against a certain part of potential athletes that will be appearing there as being in conflict with the Olympic kind of code of ethics, so to speak?
I'm sure there will be some, you know, protests along those lines, as you're saying. I don't think they will be very major, and I don't think it'll be a huge impact. I don't think with the federation you were talking about is the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, and I don't see them, you know, truthfully, you know, taking a stand against it. You know, it just doesn't seem to support the way they've rolled in the past on different issues. I mean, even the badminton, they didn't even do anything on it. It was the Badminton Federation that stepped in and said, no, you cannot throw matches like this. And that's the one who disqualified him. And if I believe right, IOC never even issued a statement about that, as in, we don't need to issue a statement, Badminton Federation will handle it. So I just don't see IOC doing anything for 2014 on the LGBT front.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting. We're going to be looking toward Rio, and we just really appreciate, you talking about this. Was the most exciting part for you personally Bolt's amazing run? I know you've mentioned it a couple of times. I mean, do you think that was really the highlight for you of these games, to see?
It's weird you think about it. We've talked for 15 minutes. Hey, we've not even mentioned Michael Phelps once.
Well, and it's interesting. We did talk about him, of course, on the last show quite a bit. I guess the swimming kind of feels like it was in the first week, but it is extraordinary what he has done.
I'm going to give you my four favorite moments, and then I'll probably give you my least favorite. Four favorite would be Usain Bolt, overall Michael Phelps accomplishment.
Yeah.
U.S. women's soccer, and I'm also going to go with the Mexico men's soccer. My least favorite, this will probably ruffle some LGBT feathers, was the opening ceremony.
Well, I don't think so. I think that most people have said that the opening ceremony fell kind of flat. I mean, when my 80-year-old parents think it was boring and not very exciting. Although I got to say, after China, it's pretty freaking hard. I mean,
how do you compare when they've you know, set the bar so high. You know, so I felt bad for London. But, you know, to be honest, I watched 45 minutes of it, bored out of my mind, and I left. I didn't even get to see the processional, which is, of course, to me, the best part of that thing.
Yeah.
The whole first 45 minutes, we're going to show you the Industrial Revolution era. Well, I didn't even know when the Industrial Revolution era was.
Right.
I still don't. I guess I got to go Google that.
Yeah.
That was my downer, the whole Olympics. I'm like, well, it can't really get worse from here. So,
yeah.
Obviously, to me, the games shot up from there, and those are my top four and my least favorite as well.
I think those are all really, really, really
amazing. What are you going with, Amy? What's your top moment?
You know, I have to say, I think Allie's three golds in gymnastics, you know, really exciting, I think, to have an African-American and a Jewish girl be our all-around competitors for the United States team. And just Allie was the one that was not supposed to be there. And the fact that she walked away with three medals, especially her final moment, you know, on the floor, pretty exciting moment. I would also agree, Michael Phelps, you know, just pretty extraordinary to watch, women's soccer. And I don't hate watching any woman play beach volleyball. So,
how can you?
So, you know, my dad and I had some fun watching the women play volleyball, and you know, it's a good, you got a good relationship with your dad when you can both watch these women play volleyball and both go, damn. That's,
hey, you know, I got to tell you, on that alley front, that was one of, what did she say, her, she had the traditional Jewish song as her,
Akiva Hala, the Hava Nagila, Hava Nagila.
Exactly. Yeah. There, I mean, you can sing it. But no, she used that and one of her routines. Was that the whole story?
Her floor. Yeah, that was definitely her floor routine. And it was just, you know, it just got the crowd so enthused. And many nations, you know, can relate to her, you know, the connection to Israel there. And I just think because she was not supposed to be one of the all-arounds. And, you know, to... you know, of course, did not, you know, Gabby Douglas was the face of the all around. But it was really Allie that helped the team win gold with her final floor exercise. Then to go on and individually win gold on the floor, win bronze on the beam. I mean, an event that she's solid in, but she just really flew under the radar. And I think
sure.
It's the underdog, and you know, going into the games, I think that was truly, to me, Olympic spirit. She fought for her spot on the team in general. She then fought. It was all eyes were on her, whether the Americans would win gold as a team. First time women have won gold since wasn't it Mary Lou Retton? I mean, that year, or Carrie Strug. I don't remember. It's been a long time since the 90s. I guess the Atlanta Olympics, 96, that was when it was. And then, you know, to go on and do so well when it is down to just you and whatever apparatus or event it was. I really thought she was an amazing story of these games and the Olympic spirit, that if you got the opportunity, even if all eyes aren't on you at the beginning, you can end up on that stand and everybody knows who you are instantly after a week of, you know, competing.
I thought it was a touchy moment. You know, I'd seen an interview where I'd read where she particularly used that song to pay tribute to the 72 Olympians
yes.
who were killed
yes.
from Israel.
Yes.
Which, you know, which was a whole other topic because that was never, you go back to the IOC, it was never honored on the 40-year anniversary
yeah.
of that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I thought it was a mistake. They should have done something, you know, memorable milestone year of 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just thought she was a class act and a great, great story for this game. And I hope that will continue to permeate. But yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I'm probably going to lean a little more to watching the ladies, but you know, definitely some great performances by the men. And I think it was a really great games. And at the same time, when they're done, you're kind of like, okay, it's time for those to be done. And interestingly enough, you know, I think there are a lot of unhappy people that Mitt Romney this weekend interrupted the games to announce his VP and felt inappropriate to me to do that in the middle of the games. But, you know, I guess if you want to platform where everybody's watching, that's the platform in which to do it. So
exactly, you know,
that will go on to be many stories.
I guess he
I'm
does
sure
that kind of
about.
Take our spotlight away from Chick-fil-A or something.
Exactly. But, you know, Ross, we just appreciate you being on and talking us through these games. We'll definitely talk with you when we head up to the other games that you mentioned. And everybody, you can read Ross doing a great job, whether he's commenting on you know, what's going on nationally with athletics or what's going on in the sports scene here on an intramural or civic level. You know, Ross is our window in, and we appreciate you for that.
You got it. I appreciate it. And good luck to our Chicago teams up in Minneapolis this upcoming week for the Gay Softball World Series.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, well, we'll have to have a news story about that in next week's show, I hope. Are you heading up?
I am not.
You're not, but you will be covering it.
I will be.
All the way. Well, we appreciate that. Ross, have a great week.
You got it, Amy. Take care.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
Well, everybody, the Olympic Games are over. Does it make you feel like you want to go run a marathon or run a 5K or go swim some laps in Lake Michigan or go jump on a trampoline? I think trampolining might be my Olympic sport because it just makes you laugh and it feels good and it feels funny and it makes me feel like I am 8 years old. Do something that makes you feel 8 years old and enjoy the rest of your week. Bye, everybody. On the next show, Scott Duff back from his Brokeback Mountain Out West tour of Wyoming, and very excited to have him on the couch with me. Talk to you then. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.